Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Monday, May 2nd, 2005. Chair Devlin should be arriving shortly. We are going to begin this morning with House Bill 5036, which is the health-related occupational licensing boards, and then that includes the State Board of Examiners for Speech Language Pathology and Audiology, the Board of Radiologic Technology, and the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. We will begin with the State Board of Examiners for Speech Language Pathology and Audiology, and I'd like to call up Brenda Felber, Executive Officer, and Jim Goris, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And Mr. Goris is the DAS, the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division staff person. Let me also give you a heads up this morning that we are expecting Representative Dallum to come down and testify on another matter, and so we may need to gavel out to take his testimony and then come right back to you. Is there any opening commentary from Legislative Fiscal?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, please go forward. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, I am Brenda Felber, the Executive Director for the Board of Examiners for Speech Language Pathology and Audiology. Nancy Dunn, current Vice Chair of the Board and Audiology, is with me this morning to help answer any questions. I'd like to start by giving you some background on the board. The Board of Examiners for Speech Language Pathology and Audiology was created by the 1973 legislature. The board is composed of two public members, one physician with certification from the American Board of Otolaryngology, two speech language pathologists, and two audiologists. Audiologists and speech language pathologists are practitioners that work with communication orders, that is, hearing loss, aphasia, delayed language disorder, delayed language development, speech disorders such as stuttering, and voice and articulation orders. Communication disorders are serious because the ability to communicate is our most human characteristic. Currently, one executive director, myself, and one office specialist at a full-time equivalent of 0.85 provide administrative and clerical support to the board and to the public. The board was created in 1973, and the authority and responsibilities are contained in the ORS Chapter 681 and the Oregon Administrative Rules Chapter 335. The board serves to ensure public safety in the practice of speech-language pathology and audiology. This licensing board is comprised of one program to protect consumers by licensing, investigating, and enforcement of the Practice Act for three types of professionals working in the state of Oregon. The board currently licenses over 1,000 speech-language pathologists, approximately 200 audiologists, and over 100 speech-language pathology assistants. Performance measures were developed under the direction of Rita Conrad of the Oregon Progress Board. You can find a full copy of the annual report beginning on page B4 in the agency summary section of the budget document. I've also provided a handout that has just a shortened version of the performance measures. And you probably noticed that there are three of them, and I've put them in the handout out of order because that's the way I plan to discuss them so that I can include some more information about Senate Bill 786 at the end. Key performance measure number two relates to measuring progress of the recent change in the law requiring certification of speech assistants. The measure tracks the number of school districts who have certified speech assistants. This performance measure is providing important information to the board on compliance with the law in the schools. Key performance measure number three tracks performance relating to continuing education requirements. The board has been able to make informed decisions based regarding sanctions and increased education and communication to licensees based on results from this performance measure. It will become more of a challenge to meet the goals when speech assistants begin reporting professional development in 2006. The third key performance measure, which is number one, relates to collecting ethnicity information from our licensees pursuant to Senate Bill 786. Data collection began in 2003 by including a survey form with all applications. And in 2004, the board included the survey form with the renewal application, enabling the board to obtain reports of ethnicity for 90% of licensees. When board member terms expired in June of 2004, the announcement was made in the board newsletter as well as on the agency website. In addition to informing interested persons of the procedure, the board also included a statement of what the law entails, and that, in quote, in the board's interest of following this directive and to potentially improve the health outcomes of people of color and bilingual people in Oregon, the board encourages people of color and bilingual people to apply for member positions, unquote. The same notice was for new positions beginning July 1st of this year is posted, and the board has received applications from members that may help meet the objective of this law. We are fortunate to have a doctor of otolaryngology of Asian descent apply to serve. The board plans to encourage the local professional organizations in ways to promote the profession, the other component of Senate Bill 786. With increased staff time per request in Option Package 283, the board plans to take next steps in complying with this law. The board would consider having a staff member attend an occasional health fair and work more directly with the professional organizations to increase diversity in the licensed practitioners. A fourth measure of concern.
Yes, Representative Gordley, or Senator Gordley, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And again, good morning to you. Looking at the information that you're providing in compliance with Senate Bill 786, and these are good results. I want to say that first and foremost. Looking at your target for 2005, you're setting 33%. After having achieved a 71% voluntary reporting from your constituency, why would you set the target so low?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, members of the committee, I think that just didn't get adjusted. I think the 90% target for 2006, when we have license renewals again, is probably the next target that we'll really consider.
Mm-hmm. So then, how should we look at 2005? What are you saying about?
Well, we continue to send out the surveys with applications as they come in, as they're requested. So I would guess that probably if people continue to voluntarily report, that might go up a bit, but the biggest increase would really come in 2006 when the renewal applications go out.
What you are saying, if I may follow up, Mr. Chair, what you're saying, though, is that the reporting results for 2005 should be something well above 33%. You just haven't adjusted that percentage.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, members of the committee, that is correct. I would expect that in 2005, since we've already collected 71%, it would be somewhere between the 71% and 90%.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair, if we could, I would request then that an adjustment be made and you set the target where you, at the point that you believe you will be able to meet it. that make sense?
Yes. Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, members of the committee, that makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. You had a question?
No.
Oh, I thought you did.
Sorry. Thank you, though.
Please proceed.
So those are the three performance measures that we have at this time. A fourth measure of customer satisfaction is pending guidance from the Department of Administrative Services. Given the trend in increase in complaints, the board is also considering adding an additional performance measure to track success in informal resolution of disciplinary cases. The board's been able to resolve most disciplinary cases by consent orders to date, thus saving in hearing and other legal expenses.
I have two questions. I don't know if you've addressed this yet. What is your period of licensure in terms of number of years that a license is for? Do you renew on every 3 years, every 2 years?
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, we do have a 2-year license period, and licenses are set to expire on January 30th of every even-numbered year. That's for the majority of our licenses. We do have a conditional license that has a 1-year expiration to suit the requirements for professional experience.
The second question, I was noticing in your handout that in this biennium, the 0305, you had quite a number of board-initiated cases in terms of discipline cases. Is there an explanation for that? Or?
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, yes, there is. I'd have to say that for the majority of those board-initiated cases resulted from noncompliance with the professional development requirements. But there have also been cases of licensees making false statements to the board that were discovered during renewal, that type of thing.
Thank you. Please proceed.
She's done. If you want to move to me, I guess.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Gores.
Okay.
Although, Mr. Gores, I can tell you, I'm practically, I think Senator Gordley are practically at the point that we can give these DAS presentations.
Chair Devlin, I'm giving them in my sleep, so I understand. For the record, my name is Jim Gores. I'm a budget analyst for the Department of Administrative Services. What I'll be going off of is what's in front of you. You probably recognize this very well by now. But and I'll just go through this very quickly. In the Consumer Business Services Program area, which is where these three agencies you'll be hearing from today are in, all of the health-related licensing boards comprise 0.9% of the total budget for this program area. Of the health-related licensing boards, the Speech, Language, and Pathology Board comprises 3.2% of the $7.4 million budget for all these boards. This board fell under the health and basic needs principle for the governor's budget. On page 4, you'll see that they're comprised entirely of other funds. The governor's recommended budget is $237,115 in other funds, and their sole source of revenue is license fees. On page 6, their budget categories, 28% are in services and supplies, and 72% of expenditures are in personal services. And on page 7, you can kind of see a historical perspective of how their budget has progressed over the last 3 or 4 biennium. And as you can see, they do have a rather large percentage increase in their budget this biennium, which are related to some policy issues that and some workload issues that they have. They have such a small budget that any kind of increase kind of comes out to be pretty large. Their major policy issues, basically funding of board functions and attorney general expenses related to the increased disciplinary case hearings that you've been hearing about, and then also agency workload. This is all kind of tied together. And with that, they have some policy packages to attempt to address these issues. One policy package of the four that they have is moving, as you've heard probably, if you remember a couple weeks ago, movement of accounting functions from the Department of Human Services to shared client services. They're asking for an increase of for their office specialist 2 position from 0.25 FTE to 0.8 FTE to address workload concerns. They're asking for an increase in attorney general limitation, and they have a fee increase to address the above needs and maintain financial stability. They have one technical adjustment, which I'm assuming we'll address at some point during this hearing, and they need to increase their other funds limitation to meet their financial obligations in the 03-05 biennium. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Gores? Yes, Senator Nelson.
Just the fee increase, how much, and just give us some background on that, please.
If you don't mind, Mr. Chair and Senator Devlin, I'll defer to Brenda. There's quite a few stages to it.
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, member of the committee. I had to find this in my presentation. This is included in option package number 281.
Which paper are you looking at?
And it's in the budget binder.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, I can read it off where you guys are looking for it. I found it in my analyst report. And it looks like it's in her budget binder on D5. Is that right? On page D5. But basically, what the board is proposing, just to kind of make sure everybody understands the policy issue here, is they're requesting in House Bill 2065 to remove their fees from statute. Once they remove their fees from statute, they are planning to administratively increase their fees. And what they are considering right now, this isn't final by any stretch, this is what they're considering. They're considering raising the fees for the speech-language pathologists and audiologists from $50 a year to $80 a year. Delinquent fees, in other words, late fees, would be raised from $10 to $50 for each incident. Application fees would be raised for all applicants from $30 to $40. And looks like I might have missed a couple.
Just inactive.
And an inactive license would go from $20 for 2 years to $50 for 2 years.
Any additional questions?
Yes, I'm just following. It's about a $60,000 increase. Didn't I see that someplace in the budget from 120 to 180 or something like that?
That's correct. The total option package is $68,790.
Can I just be honest? We're getting the message from a lot of folks is, you know, fees, and so I'm just trying to figure out if this is going to be palatable with the folks that are actually providing the services and that type of thing. And how do we verify that?
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, members of the committee. In the process of actually increasing the fees, of course, the board would use the administrative rule process where they would propose rules and take comment from the public as well, which would include the licensees, and consider those requests. The board also has support from the Oregon Speech and Hearing Association, which is the largest professional organization, and the Oregon Academy of Audiology, which is the largest audiology professional organization. And I believe we have representation here that will testify to that today.
Thank you, Senator Ross. Follow-up, the bill that would actually take your fees out of statute, what's the status of the bill?
Senator Develin, the representatives of the committee, there's actually a work session taking place next door right now, and there have been some amendments that are being considered, and I plan to go over there when we're finished here.
A hypothetical, should the bill not pass, and should we pass this budget, what would you do if you did not have the revenue?
Chair Develin, members of the committee, I am not really sure what the answer is to that. I probably look to Deborah and Jim for some guidance on that.
Well, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
They have not met their statutory cap on fees yet, according to page D5. So I don't think they have a problem.
Jim, I can.
Yeah.
Oh.
Go ahead, Jim.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, that was a preliminary discussion that when we were putting together the governor's recommended budget, and that is, I will take responsibility for that error. What it was is initially DAS had said we don't want to take your fees out of statute, we want to put a statutory cap on them.
Oh, I see.
We have since backed off on that and said taking your fees out of statute is fine. So Brenda, in compliance with what the governor had decided, put that in there. As it is now, it's not relevant to our position, if that makes sense.
Well, I need to follow up, Mr. Chair. So is there a statutory cap in place now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, no, there is not.
I see.
Yes, there is.
Yes, there is.
And they are at the top of their statute.
Okay.
Thank you.
So this was a proposed statutory cap on that's listed in this document. That's confusing. All right, thank you.
That still leaves you to the hypothetical that you don't get them removed from statute. You don't get authority to actually raise them. And you end up going into the next biennium. Obviously, you can't increase the one position that you would increase, but you might have some other costs, which might actually force you to cut back on what some of your existing costs are. So I'm just...
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think it's important that we say on the record, I'll say this for the record, that, you know, these are professional boards, and I put the emphasis on professional. And one of the points this board is trying to make to us through the documents they've provided with regard to the need for the fee increase is that, number one, the fees haven't been increased for over 10 years. Their expenses have increased, but their revenue has not kept pace with the needed expenses. The fee increase would amount to $30, moving from $50 to $80. Is that not correct? Okay. So again, this is a request that would allow this professional health occupations board to do its work professionally. I would just want that emphasis to be in the record.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. The only concern I had is we don't actually get the fee bill. So this process has a way sometimes of, even when things pass one chamber, of things getting lost before Sine die. So I guess we can leave it at that. Did you have anything additional? And I know that there are a couple people that wanted to testify. Ms. Manthi, you had a question there.
Yes, thank you, Senator Devlin. The agency is request. Jim, Mr. Gore said the agency is requesting a current biennium expenditure increase, and I was hoping that the agency could speak to that in a little bit more depth.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, shall I just proceed with my presentation? That's what I plan to talk about.
If you'll answer that question within that presentation, that would be fine.
I will certainly do that. The board, from the handouts, you can see that the board has experienced a dramatic increase in complaints and disciplinary cases. Consumers are more aware of how to make a formal complaint, and the number of licensees has increased by 300 in the last 2 years. The statute was revised in 2001 to incorporate a new licensing category of speech-language pathology assistants. However, the board opted to establish the associated fees at a low level and gather data relative to the workload to determine if an increase in fees would be needed the next biennium. This was stated in the summary of the legislation. On March 2nd of this year, I sent a letter to Co-Chair Schrader and Co-Chair Scott requesting that the expenditure limitation be increased by $7,100 for the current biennium for the board to meet unexpected expenses associated with the increase in disciplinary cases. You can see from one of the handouts that we've had a steady increase in complaints and disciplinary cases. From 1989 to 1993, there were only 10 complaints filed with this board. In the current biennium, beginning July 1st, the board has opened 10 cases based on complaints, reviewed and referred 4 complaints to other state agencies, and initiated an additional 17 disciplinary cases. As I said earlier, the disciplinary cases largely result from monitoring compliance to the professional development requirements that were implemented in statute in 1995. In addition, a change in investigative staff will probably result in more investigative expenses. The board currently contracts with an agency to provide investigative services. Previously, the board was able to obtain investigative services through a temporary employee who previously provided legal services to the board. These complaints and cases require more consultation and services from the Assistant Attorney General's Office. Legal expenses totaled $11,968 as of January 31st of this year. For the current biennium, compared with 2003-2005 legislatively adopted budget of $5,308 for the same category. Given the fact that 5 of the cases are currently being investigated, the board anticipates expenses to total $13,000 this biennium. The board has been taking some steps to reduce related expenses. They have produced and distributed newsletters to educate and inform licensees of their responsibilities. This, in turn, however, has increased our office expenses. I provided you a copy. We made some additional copies of the newsletter that went out to educate and inform licensees about how various processes work in an effort to reduce expenses from them not following what is required. The board requests that the expenditure limitation be increased by $7,100 for the current biennium in order to meet these unexpected expenses associated with the increase in disciplinary cases. Shall I proceed?
Please do.
The board has taken the following actions to control costs. In 1993, the licensure cycle was changed from annual to biennial renewals in order to minimize the workload impact and maximize efficiency. Renewals are processed during years when the legislative body is not in session. This small agency was one of the first of all state agencies to develop a website in 1997. The board continues to promote an increased use of the website, and the board is fortunate to have an office specialist on staff who provides on-site maintenance. This mall agency also plans to be one of the first to offer online renewals. The database manager, who is a contracted employee for the agency, assures the board that this will be available for processing for the renewals in 2006. In another effort to control costs, the board is proposing to increase support staff time from 0.25 to 0.80 instead of increasing executive staff time. The board has surveyed licensees and interested parties in consideration of emailing future newsletters. The board now has the capability to email newsletters, saving in printing and postage costs. And the recent installation of new telephones will provide limited teleconferencing at minimal expense. The board coordinates with other agencies and uses professional services in these ways. The agency continues to lease office space from the Department of Administrative Services in the Portland State Office Building and shares a suite and resources with seven other health-related licensing boards. The office support specialist is shared with another health-related licensing board, reducing the time needed for training and allowing for sharing of space and equipment. Network administration support is accomplished through an interagency agreement with the Board of Nursing. The agency also has an interagency agreement with the Department of Human Services, Business Services for provision of accounting services. For two complaints, the board was able to share resources and findings with the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The board contracts with private investigation firm to provide investigative services as needed, and the board also contracts with a database management firm to provide database enhancements and maintenance. Major budgetary issue is that this small agency has not increased fees, its only source of income, for 10 years. Expenses have continued to increase with the number of licensees and the demands on the agency staff at the equivalent of 0.85 full-time. The board requests four interrelated option packages. Option package 281, which we have already taken a look at, is on page D5 of the program unit section in the budget book. The board has spent down its cash balance since 1996 and is now in need of a fee increase to provide funding for mandated work. The board feels it's prudent to maintain an ending cash balance of at least 6 months' expense for this small agency. Option package 282 will provide funding for the agency to secure improved counting, mail, personnel, and payroll services outside of the Department of Human Resources. This is the same package that you've been hearing about from other health-related licensing boards. If the option packages are approved, the cashiering tasks will be handled by the current staff of the agency. Option package 283 provides funding for the increase of the administrative staff for the full-time equivalent from 0.25 to 0.80. This is an increase from 10 hours per week to 32 hours per week to handle the additional workload. As I said earlier, the additional workload has resulted from increased complaints and disciplinary cases, a need for more frequent communication to all categories of licensees, and a general increase in workload resulting from an increase in number of licensees. With more disciplinary cases, the board must hold more frequent meetings, and administrative staff provide the preparation, support, and follow-up for additional meetings. Option package 284 increases limitation for assistant attorney general expenses. If option package 283 is approved, then the executive director will be able to draft and finalize more of the common legal documents to help control attorney costs. I'd be happy to take any questions on any of that.
Any questions from the committee?
There's no incident on this annual performance thing. You indicate that you don't take complaints on hearing aid sales by hearing aid dealers. You might answer the phone call, but they don't fall under the jurisdiction of the board. Could you give me an example of what kind of complaints that you actually hear? Something in the speech pathology or the...
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, members of the committee. Probably the most frequent type of complaint we receive are from elderly people who are unsatisfied with their purchase of hearing aids. And it could be that the hearing aid isn't working properly or they didn't understand the procedure for getting a refund within a certain time frame. Can't remember what the exact technical term is for that, but our staff, myself and the office specialists do field those types of questions, and they do take some time because people want to be heard.
But you don't have jurisdiction. Who has jurisdiction?
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, members of the committee, that the hearing aid dealers are licensed by the Health Licensing Office, a separate agency.
What would be an example of a complaint under the speech language pathology?
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, members of the committee, we have had some cases of unethical practice, sexual harassment, incompetent practice. That's all I can think of off the top of my head.
Any additional? Thank you. How many people are here to testify on this board? One. Okay. Well, at this point, are you complete? You've completed your presentation.
Chair Devlin, I could be. I was just going to talk about the two bills, the board bill and the bill that you've been hearing about. But
okay, why don't you do that briefly, and then we'll go to the one person that's here to testify.
Okay. We have two bills that directly affect this agency. House Bill 2058 is the one that will change the accounting functions for this board, along with eight other agencies, to shared client services. You're probably most familiar with that. This change will provide better fiscal information for the board and allow the board to retain interest earned on its own funds. Option Package 282 provides funding for the same option. And this bill is pending Ways and Means approval. House Bill 2065 is the bill that will revise and update the Board's Practice Act. The Board's Practice Act hasn't been revised for many years, other than the revision for inclusion of certification of speech assistants a couple of years ago. It currently doesn't adequately address issues of enforcement. The board's fee, which we've already discussed, is set in statute, and it's not adequate to support ongoing operations, and it needs to be removed in order for the board, in cooperation with DAS and the legislature, to address the issue of appropriate revenue. Outdated statements about the board's relationship with the Department of Human Services need to be clarified, and the board needs flexibility in seeking accounting and budgeting services currently provided through the Department of Human Services. The bill had its first hearing on February 25th. Amendments to address the shortage of qualified supervisors for speech assistance in the schools and an inclusion of an early effective date were drafted earlier this month. And as I said earlier, these amendments are being addressed in a work session as we speak. The board urges you to support both House Bill 2058 and House Bill 2065. And if you don't have any other questions, I thank you for your attention and consideration of this request.
Any questions? Hearing none. Thank you very much.
And thank you.
Will the party come forward that's going to testify? Thanks. And if you'll identify yourself for the record and...
For the record, I'm John Tracy, 525 Orchard Drive, Monmouth, Oregon, 97361. I'm here today, Chairman Devlin, members of the committee. I'm here today as representative of the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association, member of the Legislative Affairs Committee, primarily to support the request, budgetary request by the Board of Examiners. The association feels that, as you've heard, there have been changes over the years, and the fees obviously have not kept up with the needed workload of the board. The association strongly feels that need to support the request by the Board of Examiners. As you've also already heard, and we feel we want to reiterate, that the board really works to try and prevent complaints, if you will, through the mailing of newsletters, through calling parties who aren't really clear on the law, and through working with the state association to get the word out that there are the changes. Also, I think the number of measures the board has taken to conserve money should be applauded, and that I feel, that, as the association does, that the recommended request in FTE is small in relation to the work the board will be able to do, and I think to save money in the future. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? None. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay. Next up will be the Board of Radiological Technology, Linda Russell, David Hamby, and Mr. Gores.
Good morning, Chair Devlin, members of the committee. Today, we want to thank you for giving us the consideration to hear our budget review. With me today is Dr. David Hamby. He is a professor at Oregon State University, where he teaches radiation health physics. He's also our board public member, and he is our board vice chair. He's willing to answer any questions you might have. For the record, I'm sorry, my name is Linda Russell. I am the Executive Officer for the Board of Radiologic Technology. The Board's mission is to promote, preserve, protect the public health, safety, and welfare of Oregonians exposed to ionizing radiation for the purpose of medical diagnosis and radiation therapy. The Board was created in 1977. We have seven members. They're appointed by the Governor. We have a staff of 2.5 FTE, and as you can see, our licensees have really gotten much larger over the years. We started out in 1979 with approximately 800 licensees, and we have over 5,000 today, or close to it. Over the last four bienniums, our licensure has continued to grow, except if you notice in the 99-01 session, the biennium, that is when we introduced the birth month renewal. So we did have a decrease that particular year. We also, one of our programs that we administer is a limited permit examination. We not only administer it, but we grade and monitor the program, which is part of the initial competence for permanent licensure for the limited permit. We offer this four times a year. Our board also investigates complaints, and we take the appropriate disciplinary action that's needed, and then we monitor these probationary cases. This biennium in the 03-05, we are projecting that our caseload will be down, and we feel that that's mostly due to the fact that our board has definitely been through a lot of changes, and we have restructured things. Some of the recent...
Yes. I'm not understanding what you just said. The complaints are down because the board has restructured?
Please. Senator Devlin. Senator Gordley, members of the committee. Yes, what has happened is in the last biennium, we had a budget note and had a task force, and we worked together streamlining some areas of that were of concern, which licensing and the turnaround time was a big concern at that time. But mostly, we had an executive officer who did not share all the information with our board members. So our board was not a very active board at that time. Their knowledge base was very limited due to the fact that they were not aware of everything that was going on at that time. So the board made some changes where management was concerned in December of 2003. And they decided to take a direction that was very positive, and now they are very involved in what goes on. And part of that process where the investigation cases are is that now they actually, any of the applicants or licensees that have any type of criminal history come before the board for review. And the other part of that is that the packets that we send out now, we send them out 2 weeks in advance. It has all of the investigative caseload in it. Before, our board would come in and the packet would be sitting there. So they had absolutely no time to review and be able to make good decisions about the choices that they're making. So that's what I'm talking about, Senator Gordley, is that they've restructured, they're very active, and I think they're doing much better things.
I appreciate what you've said, but I don't know that it fully explains why the number of cases have gone down.
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, members of the committee. Well, you know, we're just speculating here, but what we do believe is that in the past we did not... We used to have a investigative committee the day prior to the meeting, and members of that committee would discuss the cases, make their recommendations, and announce them at the board meeting. And basically, the board would just vote on them, taking their recommendation. Now we're calling applicants and licensees before the board. They come to the next scheduled meeting, and they explain to the board members exactly what's transpired, what has happened in their past, why they should be offered a license, and how they or what their needs will be to allow them to be able to keep, for instance, let's say someone has a drug or alcohol abuse problem. What can the board do to help them be able to keep their license in good track and avoid those substance abuse? And a lot of times we have consent orders where they have urinalysis that's done on a random basis. And usually would put these individuals on probation for at least 2 or 3 years, and they would make quarterly reports to the board. So bringing these people to the board and having them testify and actually have to be held accountable for what they're doing, I think is part of that reason. I don't really know other than that, but we like to think that's the reason.
Senator Gordley,
yes.
I might have a question that will help clarify some of this. I'm looking for something that may be in the binder, and I recognize that you have only been the executive director for about a year now, if my understanding, and that the other full-time employee has also been, or not full-time, but the other employee has been replaced in that time also. But this is simply a number of cases. Do you have data in terms of how many of the cases, how many of them were cleared, how many there was found to be someone actually responsible for a violation, what the time frame was that you processed the cases within?
Senator Devlin, I don't really have that with me today, but I'd be happy to provide that for you.
Okay, if you could send that to me.
Okay, I'll be happy to.
Because it's one thing to have complaints, it's another to know what you've done with the complaints. So,
Mr. Chair, could another... I mean, we're not done with 0305 yet.
Right.
We still have some time yet, so
right.
The numbers still could be coming up.
They could. Hopefully not, but it's a possibility.
Please, Senator Gordley, will you finish?
I am. Yeah. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Listed here are a few of the board's accomplishments. I've already touched on the fact that we have a new management direction. We like to call it the board's restructuring. We're very proud of the fact that our licensing process turnaround time used to be approximately 3 weeks or 21 days, and we are now turning that around to less than a week. So that's considerable. We also are tracking our performance through a timeline report that we have in place. We've implemented a customer service survey, and everything that's coming back on that is showing that we're providing services that our licensees are pleased with. Our limited permit examination is one that we are considering proctoring through the American Registry of Radiologic Technologists. That is a national certification body, and they offer limited permit examinations that are very defensible, and this is a consideration that the board is looking at. We have our workload concerns in the past. Those have all been solved, as we've said. The board in January had a strategic planning session, and out of that has came some four-year plan, which I'll touch base on here shortly. We also, the Senate Bill 786 had not been addressed previously, and so we now have implemented in our database a way of tracking the ethnic diversity within our licensing base. Here is just an extract that I pulled from the database, and looking at it, it's kind of interesting to see that about two-thirds of our licensing base are made up of women, and the other third is of the male gender. I'd like to talk about our performance measures, and I also will point out the page numbers in the binders where you can find this if you need additional detail. One thing I'm very proud of is that our annual report was one of the top 20 agencies' reports from the Progress Board, and so we were pleased to be there, considering that this was our first go-around with this. We have three goals that are actually tied to the board's mission. The first is, of course, protecting our patients that are diagnosed or treated with exposed to ionizing radiation. Measure one addresses that, and you can find this on page 35 of your budget binder. And this actually tracks those individuals or applicants or licensees that self-report substance abuse chemical dependency. Measure two is on page 36, and this measures the amount of the passing rate of our limited permit examination. Measure three and four are kind of tied together because they both deal with continuing education, which is one of the things that we do in our single program part of our agency. The first measure, number three, has to do with the continuing education activities that the board approves and that our CE providers or continuing education providers actually give that our applicants go to. They are required to have continuing education to renew their licensure. Measure number four is on page 38, and this is actually measures the number of continuing education offerings that the board members give themselves, or I also do a fair bit of that as well. We think that this is an excellent source of outreach, and it's a way for us to communicate with our licensees. Our goal, our second and third goal, they too kind of are related, and they go together in the fact that they're about service. And that's what our agency is about, that and protecting the public. The second goal, relate in a manner that supports a positive business environment. Measure 5, which is on page 39, it tracks how many constituents or stakeholders are coming to our board meetings and committee meetings. And this is an opportunity for us to collaborate and resolve any concerns before they become big issues. Our third goal is to provide excellent service. And part of that service for Measure 6 is that we do track the turnaround time of our licensing. And we have surpassed this measure. And like I said earlier, we are actually at an average of about 6 days for processing of our applications. And performance measure 7 is on page 41. And this actually tracks the amount of online type of application processing that we have. This is an area that the board is working on to improve. We do want to have online renewals. and application processes, and we've been working with our database administrator to resolve that and get that implemented. The Board of Radiologic Technology is a one program agency. Part of that scope includes licensure, continuing education, investigations, and administration. And we're moving into phase two of our budget. These are just a few of the cost-saving measures that the board has taken. We have an interagency agreements with those individuals for IT support, accounting, cashiering, mail services. I've already touched on the streamlining efforts that the board has taken where investigation cases are concerned. We also share resources. The Board of Speech and Audiology is one of the boards that we share equipment with. We are another way to save costs is that I have personally been going to training so that I can update the website instead of having it done in the past. We had it done by an administrator. The board is moving again, as I said previously, with online renewals. We feel that this is definitely a way to cut costs, and the sooner we get this implemented, the better it will be. We also want you to be aware that the board is thinking about the future. There is a need for expanding our oversight into nuclear medicine, perhaps. I think most of you are aware of magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI as it's typically referred to, and ultrasound. None of these are regulated in the state of Oregon. And we've been working with Radiation Protection Services, and we'll be developing this as we go along. We also have concerns with radiation use and safety, and part of the reason why we want to switch our examination over to the American Registry of Radiologic Technology is that it will raise the standards, and the radiation use and safety portion of it will be equal to that of the radiologic technologists that they take for national certification. So that would be very helpful. Some of the other cases, and this is a little bit startling, but and you can see a need for regulation and licensing. This happens to be a very big concern. Out in your malls and a lot of your places, we're finding that ultrasound is being done on the fetus of unborn children so that they can get an image and send it to grandma or you know, Aunt Beth or whoever. And they're actually retaking this and directing and focusing that energy on the fetus to get the facial images. We do not know the dangers of ionizing radiation, and therefore this is, even though it's a much lower dose and it's a different way of applying it, there are still concerns here that the board will continue to move in that direction, and it's part of protecting the public.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Are these areas of future oversight areas that are licensed in other states?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, yes, they are. As I'm finding out, it oftentimes takes a great deal of collaboration and effort to bring something new into place. With the world of radiography, the technology is advancing so rapidly that a lot of the equipment that's coming out is actually taking dual modalities or types of licensure and combining them into one. And so this is a concern of the boards. We do need to look down the road and look at these areas particularly and see if licensing them and having regulatory control over them, I think, is very beneficial to preserving the protection of our Oregonians. I really do. Some of the board's short-term goals, I've kind of touched on this one because we are really excited about it, and that is switching the limited permit examination over to the American Registry of Radiologic Technology. The other big issue for the board is being able to provide 100% background checks for all of our applicants and our license renewals. This is would be done through the law enforcement data system that's offered by the Oregon State Police. and I will bringing it up a little bit later. It is one of our packages as well. We've also, like I said, been training so that we can be up on all the latest and greatest website maintenance. The TeamSite 6.0 is the newest training that is taking place. We are in the process of updating our application forms, and our database is just about complete. And when this conversion is done, it's going to really streamline our reporting capabilities. And part of this conversion, like I said earlier, we introduced the Senate Bill 786, and now we have that information in place and we can extract it. The board had their retreat and a strategic planning meeting in January of 2005, and out of that came a four-year plan. Some of those items are listed here. The board is planning on updating our statutes and rules. We are working with the limited permit. We want to continue with annual inspections of the schools. Out of this, we're hoping to establish some curriculum changes. And with that in mind, we're looking at possibly an accreditation program down the road. We are looking to expand our partnership with licensing and other regulatory boards. As I spoke a little bit earlier about the changing technologies, there may be need for the board to look at changing our name to reflect all of the technologies. Part of the conversion package also involves being able to track our investigative cases. There will be a process in there where it will be able to advise us on when a consent order needs to be moved to a default order and this type of things, which will, in the long run, will streamline that process. And they also discussed in great length the need to for future modalities for licensure, and this will be on the forefront. Part of the nuclear medicine, MRI, and ultrasound are areas that we're particularly concerned with. The board has four policy packages before you today. They are package 261, shared client services, 263 is safety and our LEDS funding, 265 is our customer service enhancement, and 266 is for legal services and that increase. Those total packages will come to $67,261. And if I might, I'll go into those for you. Number 261 on shared client services can be found in your budget binder on page 59 and 60. And this will move our accounting services to the Department of Human Services along with the other health-related licensing boards. Our cost to be able to do that would be $10,191. Package number 263 is our safety and LEDS funding. And this is the top priority for the board. The LEDS background checks are through the law enforcement data system, which is part of the state police. To be able to implement that program, the cost will be $2,895. We feel that this is something that we definitely need very badly. Package number 265 is our customer service enhancement. The board's goal is to offer its licensees better service than they expect. Our licensees pay for the agency's programs. Currently, we're tracking the service that we give through our customer service survey, and we also are tracking how quickly we turn our licensee applications and get them licensed by our timeline report. This package is asking for an increase in staff of a half-time FTE. Our workload continues to rise with an increase in our licensing base and the service that the board is providing. The half-time FTE kind of breaks down in this order. 0.3 of it is to allow us to continue with the process that we have in place right now. And the other 2 point would be to implement the LEDS program. The total cost for the half-time FTE, which is an office specialist 2, would be $40,566. The last policy package before you today is for our legal services increase. The board wishes to...
We have one question. Representative Wisnett.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Russell, your initiative for the LEDS in addition to the personal, you just told us your personnel will be $40,000. The $2,892 for that, you're saying, is an annual charge or biannual charge to go into the data?
The excuse me, I'm sorry, Senator Devlin, represent Wisman and members of the committee. The $285.95, I think it is part of that is the annual fee for that. It's every 2 years, so it's biannual fee and actually the program itself. So the first, when you first implement the program, that is the cost of it, and then it follows, I think, roughly around $1,500 to $1,700, depending on how many of the reporting capabilities that you want. Since I'm not working in LEDS, I don't really know the particular details of it.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Russell, why did you decide to go to LEDS and not do a background check? Did your board talk about doing a background check or Oregon records check? The reason we're asking this is we've had several boards come before us, and we're trying to see why some do certain kind of checks on their membership and others do other, and how much the cost is and why it's... and so I think this is the first time we've actually seen a dollar amount to the LEDS service. And the data that Mrs. Monte gave me shows the agencies that have the LEDS. But why did your board talk about why you went that step and not all the way to background check and things like that?
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, Representative Wisman. Yes, we did. Actually, we had a couple of representatives came before several of the smaller boards, and we have the Board of Investigators and the Veterinary Board. Their investigators were part of that session, and with our network administrators, who the Nursing Board actually has the LEDS in place, and we network with them. And so we all met and we discussed, the benefits of this particular program. Being through the Oregon State Police, they feel that it's a very beneficial program. It has access on your desktops. It's easy for the person to learn, and it's just very quick and fast and relatively, inexpensive. I did speak with the investigator from the Board of Investigators, and he told me that they do a background check through the FBI. They do fingerprints, and the cost is $39 for that. Now, he wasn't certain if this was the total, if this was the actual cost, or if it was being kind of, supported by something else over here. But that was the fee that they charged their licensees, or applicants, I should say.
One more follow-up. Yes. Sure, then. Okay, what, Mrs. Russell, what does LEDS give you? Because you're saying, you're saying you do background checks on those people that admit they have been arrested or convicted, which I hope is not too many. but what does LEDS give you? Does it, and how do we know that people are giving us the right names? I guess you're checking their records and all that stuff. So.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, Representative Wisnett, I touched on the Board of Nursing, and we actually contract their services. They do the LEDS background checks on those individuals that do self-report. I don't really know what the process that it does, but I know that it's a database that they enter the social security number of that person, the date of birth, and it brings all of this information up as far as if they have criminal history with the Oregon State Police, is my understanding.
The question that's being asked is, if you do the LEDS check, which you'd probably be doing a criminal history check or a wants and warrants check, you're actually relying upon the information that the individual gives you to identify who they are. If you do the background check, then actually you're doing the fingerprints, and the FBI is checking the fingerprints against everyone that they have on file. And so in some cases they find a person has misrepresented who they are. Obviously in your position somebody could go and take a similar identity to someone in another state that had the credentials and then try to represent themselves as that individual.
I think that's absolutely right, Chair Devlin.
And a LEDS check would not actually necessarily determine that. It would just simply determine that the person that they represented themselves to be, although, of course, they'd have to match a lot of criteria. They'd have to be 5'8", and 150 pounds. And
Chair Devlin, members of the committee. The board, actually, we have... we would support FBI checks, fingerprint checks. Basically, we want to have background checks on all of our applicants and licensees that apply for renewal. This is an area that we feel we're not doing the best job of protecting Oregonians, quite honestly, and we want to change. And this was our humble attempt at changing. Whatever the legislators would recommend, yeah, we would definitely follow.
Well, thank you. I think Representative Wisnett and I have had a concern in this area, but it's probably a concern for a future legislative session because we've got to look at what all boards are doing. And so,
charge.
Were you done, Representative?
Yes, sir, thank you.
Representative Jensen.
Just a quick question. Is the 2355 the current cost for software, is that a one-time only charge? So would the future biennium come in with just the yearly use charge?
Yes.
Okay. Any additional? Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. And our last policy package before you today is number 266, which you can find on in your budget binder on page 65 and 66. The board would like to provide adequate level of legal services. As you can see by our graph here, we have our number one disciplinary action is those that practice without proper licensure. The majority of these individuals actually let it lapse, and that's usually the reason for the practicing without being properly licensed. This illustrates to you that we have spent approximately $20,000 over the last 4 years, or the last two bienniums, for legal services, which translates to approximately $853 per month. In the 03-05 biennium, our budget is approved at $6,971, or $290 a month. And even with the 16% inflation increase, that would bring it to $337. It's just not adequate. Our board, we would like to remain fiscally prudent, and so we are asking for an increase of $567 a month, or $13,609. We have really worked hard at keeping those costs down. We think that we can do it for this. The current legislation that we have is Senate Bill 104, and basically this is a housekeeping bill, and it takes out and clarifies language that is no longer applies. Our Senate Bill 224 would increase the board from 7 members to 9, and they feel that this would help streamline their functions, their oversight, and the accountability that they have. The Board of Radiologic Technology is an other funds agency. The governor's recommended budget is $471,619, and the board's functions are supported entirely by our licensing base. We thank you for this opportunity to come before you today, and we're ready to answer any other questions you might have.
Any questions from Ms. Russell?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Not a question, but just a comment. On page 15 in the notebook under the tab Agency Summary, there is a description of what's happening in the profession around supply, and I don't know that I don't recall you talking about the future of the profession, and I think it's important to, again, put this on record because you're pointing out here that during the next decade, due to aging in the workforce being radiographers and radiation therapists, that the size of the the forecast is going to be 30% below projected need over the next decade. That's pretty significant and definitely something that we should be taking note of.
Senator Javelin, Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, members of the committee, you're absolutely right in pointing that out, and I'm sorry that I missed that concept in this presentation today. It's a very large concern, and all indications indicate that the field of radiography, not only in the radiation technologists, but as far in the radiation therapists, but also the limited permit programs have been, or the need will decrease, because the majority of people that are in the field of radiography right now are in my age category, and they are starting, or they are termed the baby boomers, and so you know, we're reaching the age of retirement, and when that happens, the younger force is not there. Even though we've been working very hard to implement some of the other limited permit schools, we have jurisdiction over those schools, and we have approved two new ones in the last couple of years. That's just a small portion of it. When I spoke earlier of the accreditation program, we feel that perhaps if part of this limited permit program could be accredited towards a full rad tech program, that that might ease the workflow and put others into the field. It is a concern, and the board is aware of it, and we will be working as much as we can in that direction. But thank you for bringing it to everyone's attention.
Senator Nelson and Senator Whitson.
Just a comment. It seems to me I've been involved with a group called the Telecommunications Coordinating Council. And one of their big issues is working with healthcare and bringing access really throughout the state. And I think one of the things that they're really working on is the radiologist technology, technicians, you know, how are you going to continue to supply these people. Are you involved with that process? Or?
Senator Devlin, members of the committee, and Senator Nelson, I'm not involved, but I certainly would love to be. Our board chair, Ernest Wythe, last week he met with Blue Mountain College, and they are looking to start a new radiology program there in conjunction with Lynn Benton. And so I think that we are very much looking at these types of concern, and rural Oregon is part of that, and how healthcare services are offered across the state, not only in the metropolitan areas. So if I could get that information from you, I would love to contact them.
I'd love to get you involved. I mean, now, do you do anything as far as with OHSU, because they're part of this group too? What's your connection there, and how do you do this?
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, and Senator Nelson, we have been working with OHSU. We actually have been working at a program where I spoke a little bit about hybrid equipment. There is a piece of equipment that's a hybrid that's part of nuclear medicine and the technology of radiologic technology. And OHSU has this piece of equipment in place, and they've been working in correlation with PCC, who has a radiologic technologist program in place, to come up with a training program. Our board does not have a variance capabilities in our statutes. Radiation Protection Services does. We do have an advisory member on our committee. And so we've been working with, we like to call them our sister agency. So we've been working with them to be able to have this equipment used, because it's very costly. In the interim, well, we can, you know, come up with the licensing and all of the other program efforts that go along with that.
Thank you.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Devlin. Just a comment. I find it very disturbing that sonography, nuclear medicine, and MRI technology is not being regulated. I think some of us can remember the fluoroscopes that were rampant in department stores. These were unshielded radiation machines that today would be abhorred in use, and you'd be criminally prosecuted for using them, particularly the sonography. This is a evolving technology, and the power of those machines is wonderful for medical diagnostics. But the side effects of some of that increased power is really unknown, and to have that in the shopping malls is amazing to me.
If I could follow up on
that.
I really appreciate the senator's comment. Was something I wanted to get back to as well. It would be helpful if you could provide information for us that further describes where Oregon fits nationally in terms of its licensing standards. Where do we fit? And what you've already laid out what some of our challenges are, but where, how far below national standards are we, if that's a way to frame it?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, members of the committee. I don't really think that Oregon is below standard. We sit on the RSTHEME committee for the American Registry of Radiologic Technology, which is the national certification exam for radiologic technologists. The reason that we do sit on that committee is because we actually implemented continuing education as part of our renewal process prior to them requiring continuing education. We attend, one of our board members every year attends. We personally, the executive officer used to go to this meeting, but we've cut back on out-of-state travel, and so we send our board members, one of them every year, to go and work with other boards from all over the country to make sure that our continuing education efforts and where we're at stay at a high standard.
Very good. Thank you. That answers part of the question. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Gordley and Senator Whitsitt, are you complete?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Russell, you're complete with your presentation, I would understand. Mr. Gores, could you give us an expedited DAS presentation?
Certainly. For the record, my name is Jim Gores. I am, once again, budget analyst for the Department of Administrative Services. I will go through this very quickly. In the Consumer and Business Services Program area, once again, health-related licensing boards comprise 0.9% of all funds budget. Mm-hmm. Of this, radiologic technology comprises 6.4%. Mm-hmm. Once again, they fell within the health and basic needs principle of the governor's budget. This agency is entirely other funds. Their budget, as Ms. Russell said earlier, is $471,619 other funds, and all their revenue comes from licensing fees. Of that, 36% is services and supplies, 64% is personal services. Major policy issues, their board restructuring and turnaround, as you've heard described. Supply and demand of in the radiologic profession, as you've heard, their board workload, their board is they have become much more involved, and that also increases the workload. And then also something that was not touched upon that I just feel I probably should bring up is there's a little bit of friction between the limited permit holders and the licensed technologists in this field. It's a natural friction infringing upon. It's kind of a turf battle of sorts. And so it's a natural friction, but it is something that is a policy issue for them to deal with at times. And then I won't even go through the policy packages. So that is it, unless you have questions.
Any questions for Mr. Forrest? Yes,
Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask I think it's the vice chair of the board's position. Do you think that we could have some legislation proposed on these shopping malls' little bill that if they could help the board could help draft a bill or something to put?
Representative Wisdom, we probably could in a future legislative session, or if someone wanted to start something through an existing bill that was already in existence. I can tell you though that to start the expansion of the scope of what a board's consideration is going to be, given the number of players that are involved, given how long it's sometimes taken us to do some things where there was significant opposition, that would probably be an issue for the next legislative session, although this board could be directed by budget note to examine this issue and report back to the next legislative session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's an issue that they've surfaced to us now, and that I would be concerned that we, as looking after the people, we should be sure something is being done or looking into this issue that Senator Wissett and Senator Gourley has talked about.
I certainly support that.
And again, in terms of it's not the same area, but what Mr. Gore has touched upon, my limited understanding is, let's say you have a physician's practice and they have a limited license, I forget the exact terminology, and maybe they have one of the registered nurses or someone else who's got the limited license. The question for the other side of theirs, they would believe that actually that they should have a licensed person. So it's a significant issue. And I can understand the tension it creates. Any additional questions? Is there anyone here to testify for this board? Yes, Mr. Handy.
I just want to, I'll be brief. I've been on this board for less than a year. July 1st of last year was when I came on. Out of the seven members, there are four new members, and I don't know the history of the board other than secondhand information, but some of you may. And I just want to I want you to be comfortable with the fact that this is an entirely new board, and we have great confidence in our executive officer. She does a great job. Just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you very much. Thank you all, and we will go on to our next board. The Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, Lori Mackinnon, Executive Director, and Mr. Gores. Ms. Mackinnon, before you start, could you give us some indication whether there's anybody here to testify?
Senator Chairman Devlin, no.
Okay. The reason I was asking is because I was a little bit concerned, given the time, that if there was anybody that had come here to testify, and if we did go over and we had to move this to next Monday, the remainder of it, that I wanted the people to testify first. If not, then please proceed with your presentation.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the committee. My name is Lori Mackinnon, and I'm the director of the Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and with me is Dr. John Betts, who's board chair. I've provided you a handout. I have a brief copy of it, which I'll go through very quickly. The board was created in 1914 by statute. This is our 101st anniversary of operation. We have eight members. Five are practicing veterinarians. Two are public members, and we recently, in the last session, added a veterinary technician. The staff consists of one director, me, a 0.75 FTE office specialist, and a half-time investigator. The purpose of the board is to license and regulate the veterinary professionals to ensure quality veterinary care in Oregon. We have about 1,500 actively licensed veterinarians, 835 vet techs, 152 euthanasia technicians, and 34 euthanasia agents currently working in the state. We do our job by setting and reviewing standards of practice, qualifying applicants for national competency exams. We do this twice a year. We provide technical assistance to licensees and information to the public. We respond to and investigate complaints about veterinary care. And we review standards to reflect technological changes and requirements, as well as changing client expectations. We have six performance measures. The first one is to improve the average number of days we take to respond to a licensee request.
And which page are you on?
I'm on page two of mine. The performance measures in your budget book are on pages 16 through 28. We're currently taking about 3 days to respond to a licensee request. We want to get that down to 1 day. The average time that we take to issue a new license is currently 6 days, and we want to get that down to 3 days. And I'd like to clarify on that that
that's our time after we have received all of the necessary documentation that, that we need to get to the point where we can actually print and mail that license. Average time to renew a license, I surprised myself on this one because I thought we were, I didn't know that we were doing as well as we're doing. It's taking us an average of 9 days to renew a license, and that includes not just the people, the 81% that get their renewals in a timely fashion, but this also includes weekends and those who send in a renewal without the money or without a signature or without having answered the criminal background questions. The percentage of licensees who rate the board good or better, I've provided you with a copy of our customer satisfaction survey, which is half of what we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing a survey of the public in the next biennium. But according to what we have, and I should say in your handout, I accidentally indicated a 76% response rate for licensees. That should actually be 46. Still, the consultant tells me that's a pretty good response rate. Generally, you get about 2% in a survey. We currently are rated at 75 to 80% doing good or better of what we do. The average number of days from receipt of a complaint to the close of an investigation, currently we're at 120 days, which is a statutory requirement. We'd like to get that down to 90 days. And then the percent of board decisions that are not contested or appealed, we'd like to get that to 100%. We're currently at 80. Are there any questions about our performance measures before I... Reduction options, we can lose the investigator if we have to. Budget drivers and environmental factors. There are two things coming up. Senate Bill 291, which has been already discussed, I think, adequately. That would increase our expenditures a little bit, but we feel that the it would be more than offset by the increase in quality of service that we would be getting. And veterinary insurance has recently offered an option to their licensees of $25,000 to contest, specifically to contest board discipline. So we expect to see some increase in requests for hearings. Major changes in the last 10 years, we moved the investigator from a contractor to a temp and now to a 0.5 FTE. Cost containment, we don't buy things we don't need. We have two national exams that we administer one of them for vet techs and we do a pass-through on the other. They have raised their fees, we have not. We've been able to continue to do that without raising the cost to the applicant. We continue to do database improvements, and we, like the other boards, will be moving to online applications and renewals just as soon as we can. And we hope to continue to share space and resources with our co-located boards on the fourth floor. We have professional contracts for our database support and technology and hardware and software needs, and we have used a professional contractor to design and conduct a customer satisfaction survey. Policy package 291, does anybody have any questions specific to this board about that policy package?
Any questions?
Okay, this is Deborah's favorite part, ending cash balances and reserves. We have about a 16-month balance, cash balance, operating balance. I live in terror of losing that to a hearing. We have three hearings scheduled. We have another two that are probably going to be turning into hearings. And one of these hearings involves an individual who has recently busted the Idaho Veterinary Board budget, and the e-board did not give them any more money. So that case has gone up. This is an individual who is an attorney as well as a veterinarian. He's a practicing attorney in Idaho and a practicing veterinarian in Oregon. And every board has their nemesis groups. We just have one nemesis. We are also looking at potentially losing four members in the next biennium. So there would be some costs associated with training new members. There's a typo on your copy of this, too. On the last part of that narrative, talking about the licensee who cost us $70,000. She is trying to regain her license elsewhere, and I think I misspelled regain. The proposed legislation that will have an impact on us includes House Bill 2283, which would make it difficult for us to compel a licensee to undergo a competency exam. And it also would nullify or certainly muddy the bill that our professional organization presented, which is Senate Bill 318, which gives us specific authority to direct a licensee to undergo a competency exam. And if you may be aware of a case in Washington County right now where a licensee was in criminal court for animal abuse, we didn't have the authority to do anything to her license because the conduct didn't occur within the scope of her practice as a veterinarian. If we had had the authority to compel a mental or physical exam, we would have had an easier time dealing with that situation. So anyway, 2283 would make our life more difficult. 2285, which exposes confidential information in a complaint, would also make our lives more difficult, but that bill may not be going anywhere. House Bill 2051 is sponsored by the Office of Degree Authorization, and that bill would potentially put us in a lawsuit situation with about 25 licensees who graduated from Ross University. Office of Degree Authorization has determined that Ross University degrees are illegal for use in Oregon. We are contesting that, and we have a bill, Senate Bill 193, that exempts us from the provisions of the Office of Degree Authorization statute. Our bill has already passed. If 2051 passes, then we're going to be in a position where we've got dueling statutes, and I expect that will be difficult. And then Senate Bill 529, the board would coordinate pet sterilization, a fund established for pet sterilization. This would operate much the same as the Euthanasia Task Force does right now. And it's an administrative effort, but I don't see a lot of fiscal impact on it. Senate Bill 786, I think we've made some improvements since the last time we were before you. There's a table that shows you how many what ethnic type of practitioners are and where and where they are in the state. Our new member, Dolores Galindo, who is a certified technician and also an instructor at Portland Community College, regularly is involved in outreach to minorities and bilingual speakers. And our board member, unfortunately he's not here today, Dr. Emilio DeBess, who is also the state public health veterinarian, and I suspect he's out somewhere doing West Nile virus or bird flu stuff right now. He is trilingual, and he works, teaches at Portland State University to a multi-ethnic student body as well as Apollo College, and he works with a group of veterinarians in Medford who go around doing outreach to students trying to get them interested in the veterinary profession.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. It's great to see the activities taking place under Senate Bill 786. And I commend you for your efforts. Could you say a little bit more about the science and math fair that took place on April 14th? Where did that take place? And
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I don't have information about that. I can have it for you.
Okay.
For the work session.
It would be good to hear something more about that, and including what some of the outcomes were for the middle school age girls and minority youth who attended the event. Thank you.
And then on, as I mentioned, we have two board members who are actively involved in mentoring minority and bilingual individuals. And then I've provided, I might have gone a little overboard on the languages, but I didn't want to leave anybody out. So there's a table that shows you how many speakers of what languages are in which counties. And one of the things we're going to do with our database is link those languages to the practitioner and have a lookup for anybody who, for example, wants to you know, contact the veterinarian who speaks Urdu, which is also that if possible, would be able to find where that practitioner is in the state.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Again, I just think that's very exciting to see that level of detail. I noticed that you have four or five people who also practice sign language, American Sign Language. I know that's a particular interest of Representative Mark. But again, that gets to where we're trying to get to, which is inclusion. And just again, let's get the details.
Mr. Chair and members, that concludes my presentation.
Okay, Mr. Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, I'll do this very briefly in the interest of time. The Veterinary Medicine Board, for the record, just in case I didn't say it, my name is Jim Gores, DAS, Department of Administrative Service, Budget Management Analyst. Anyway, Consumer Business Services Program Area, Health-Related Licensing Boards, once again, 0.9%. Of this group, the Veterinary Medical Examiners comprises 7%. Once again, they fell under the Health and Basic Needs Governor's Principle. This agency also is entirely other funded. Their revenues come completely from licensing fees, and their governor's recommended budget is $517,975. Of that budget figure, 44% is services and supplies, and 56% is personal services. Major policy issues, many of which Ms. Makinen has already addressed. The Oregon Degree Authorization Bill has some policy implications, their fees and ending balance. One thing I think that she did not mention is that the board received a directive, I believe last biennium, to not include or not charge, to reduce their fees. What they have done is they do not charge the euthanasia tax, thank you, and the euthanasia facilities for their fees at this time, and they are planning to continue that.
Right. We also don't charge vet tech renewals.
And vet tech renewals, thank you. And then one thing also, there's just with, as with people, there's an increasing interest in alternative care for pets. In other words, natural healing options. That also has increased the number of complaints that the board sees. And then they also have one policy package, and that's the one to move them to shared client services. That is all.
Any additional questions? Does your board chair have any comments?
Senator Devlin, members of the committee, I don't really have anything
if
to add.
If you identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm John Betts. I'm a practitioner from Woodburn. I'm chairman of the board. I don't have anything to add to the what Lori presented. She does a good job for us, and it's interesting that we were able to carry 16 months because we only charge, I think, is a reasonable fee, which is $100 for a license, and I can't see reducing a license fee for a professional. I mean, it doesn't bother me, and I don't know, I've never really talked to any veterinarians in the state that really complain about the $100 fee that they pay for their license. So, and I have, the only other comment I would have would be the She grossly underestimated the number of veterinarians that do sign language, because Senator Witzig can attest to this, that every large animal practitioner in the state knows sign language, but a 2,000-pound bull is coming at them. So, with that,
I'll make sure I include that.
Any additional questions?
There is one additional question, Mr. Chair. So what is the impact of reducing the investigator?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, it would probably eliminate the investigation investigator. Prior to about 95, probably closer to 93, there was no investigator. And There weren't investigations. What it would mean in actual terms is I would investigate, and I'm not an investigator.
May I comment?
Yeah.
Senator Devlin, Senator Gordley. My only comment on that would be, if we eliminated the investigator, we might as well eliminate the board, because there's no reason for us to meet.
Any additional questions?
Well, I just hope that we take note of what has been said for the record, and I'm going to stand with this agency, which is making the case for needing an investigator.
Thank you very much for your presentation. With that, we will close the hearing on House Bill 5036. We are scheduled to be back tomorrow morning with the Oregon University System. And we'll close the committee meeting.